Good morning. This is October the 5th, 1993. We're having the first part of Maitreya's lecture on universalism for the fifth seal.
So, how's everybody? Ready for another wonderful story about God's plan and how it happened? Well, we're going to talk about the fifth seal today, and we will see how it happened, how we look at the fifth seal. Because before I start my lecture or my satsangs, I hear you guys say something. And I come here, you guys are so all ears. So you have to make me comfortable. Just say hi, how are you doing, you know, everything is okay. Yeah. And as usual, we start the question of when did the seventh seal started? No, don't look, don't cheat. You can cheat. When did the fifth seal started? Not seventh seal, the fifth seal started. When? Well, no, how come? How come you pick up? Right. You're right in the sense of, it's revealed to humanity around 100 years ago, but when did it really start? That's right. Why it started in eternity? Because it is a part of the eternal divine path. So it's a part of the eternal divine path, so it started in eternity. So God already knew that He is going to reveal the fifth seal to humanity. The whole plan is already in ethereal level, in God's mind. Okay? So, do you understand what I say? A little bit, huh? Is anybody else has a problem understanding me? No? So, all the seals are in God's mind. So it started in eternity. It's been there, it is there, and it's going to be there forever. And who was the first spiritual teacher to humanity? Adam? But when did really spirituality started for humanity? What happened? If you remember that God said, let there be light, and the light went through the eternal divine path, reached the lights, and He came back as human teachers, and then of course He brought the teaching to humanity, and humanity wasn't really in this physical body. They were more what? They were more in an ethereal body. And eventually they fell and fell and fell and fell. They got this human body, and later on their third eye was closed, and the new human was created. It's mostly intellect. You know, most of the human, even they don't know they have the third eye. You know, they don't know how to look at the thing, you know, from the spiritual point of view, but from what they have to have two physical, you know, eyes, and whatever they see outside is the reality to them, okay? And that is what they take as that's the reality, that's it, okay? And eventually they can slow down that God had to reveal the teaching to very few elects and to humanity, and that is was when the Nova brought those rituals of burning flesh, and God created the rainbow and said, anytime I want to destroy the earth again, I put a, when I want to destroy it with the rain, of course, I put a rainbow, and it reminds me, oh, I promised, you know, I promised, who did he promise to? Noah. Okay. He promised Noah, I'm not going to destroy it because he sees the rainbow and remembers of his promises. So no, I'm not going to destroy it. So the first seal, which is the spiritual path, which is the mystical path, was revealed to humanity to Noah. And of course through his sons and through her, his their children, and they eventually became people who settled in Egypt and in India and different places in the earth, and they become the spiritual teachers for humanity. And of course that was the first part. Okay. God had more than, you know, just the mystical path. He had to reveal the second part to humanity. How did he reveal the second part? Through whom? The what? Sorry, Abraham. Abraham, right. He chose Abraham. After a long time, of course, they were divided to different kind of people, and the intellectuals and the, you know, the Shudras and the Vipras and Katrians and all that, and eventually from the spiritual branch, he chose Abraham as a chosen person. And he, of course, you know the story, he told him, leave your family, take your, you know, don't go back to your country, stay in the United States and teach the eternally one. There's a similarity there, isn't it? You know, he said, you can't go back to your home, you have to stay here and, you know, teach this teaching. And so Abraham had to obey, and he took out his wife and everything and left. And of course, eventually he had two children, Ishmael and Isaac. And the story goes on and on. And of course he blessed Abraham first. He changed his name to Abraham later on. And of course Abraham, we know the children of Abraham become what? Arabs, which cover Saudi Arabia, all the way to Middle East, North Africa, all the way to South America. Just all are the children of Ishmael. And also later on he also blessed the children of Israel, and they will become Hebrews. Of course they were divided into two tribes, and we talked about this in the previous lectures. Okay. Last year, but Islam the year before, for about Christianity and all that. And so the children of Israel became people who live in Israel, north toward the west, all the way to Europe and United States. So they become the children of Israel. And where do the children of Israel meet the children of Ishmael? In New Mexico, don't they? Where is South America? Mexico and South America. Where is North America? North America and Canada. So it's just, it's a meeting point again. You know, we are in a meeting point that these two children meet each other. That's another interesting point. Okay. What time do we get rest or what's it called? Okay. Yeah, I'm not gonna discount. I just wanna know what time we can get there. Yeah. Okay, it's probably around 9:10. It's the time. You figure that one out. Okay.
South America, maybe for other people, it's because of Spanish people. And Spanish people, if you say that like Spain, they're part of children of Ismael because they've been mixed with Arabs, is that the reason for?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The Arabs are pretty good in making children because men can have as many as what they want. And also there was one part to spread the, you know, the seed of Arabs and the Islamic teaching. And they were on Spain for 200 years. Okay, and that is why they, you know, a lot of Spanish people, even their name, their culture, their buildings, adobe buildings, okay, just completely Arab. Actually, if you go to, there is a Arab center in, what's that place? Abiquiu, yeah. If you go to Abiquiu North thing and you look at their building, it's almost like a Spanish building. It's a little different, of course. You expect, you know, as, you know, goes through the evolution, things change a little bit. And also, Spanish people probably were more influenced with the European culture also, after the, you know, Spain was conquered eventually with the Christians, and Christian took over and European culture got into it. So there was some influence of Europe too in it. But also, the Arabic culture stayed with them. That's why, you know, they have even the name Mansur. They, you know, even I've heard some people here, the Spanish last name Mansur comes from Nasr, and Nasr is just completely Arabic. Or they have the what's that, Fatima, the of Lady of Fatima. Yeah, Fatima was the daughter of Prophet Muhammad. And they have the Lady of Fatima as their, you know, as one of their saints. Okay, you can see there's a lot of influence there. You know, also their look. You know, Spanish people and Arabic people, they have some kind of a similarity into them. So, in that way, God promised Ishmael, also it's fulfilled. Not only they came from Arab and came to North America, Africa, but they went all the way to South America. Does it make sense?
Yeah, North American coming from Israel, last tribe of Israel.
No, last tribe of Israel, they were pushed to the, they couldn't go to the south. Yeah, because there was Egypt. They couldn't go to east because this was Assyrian and Persian, you know, not Persian probably, mostly Assyrian. They were their enemy. They couldn't go north. There was just, you know, Caspian Sea, and the only place they could go was a little north to the west and west. And exactly, if you study the Mormon's book, that's exactly what it says happened to those Israelis. They left Israel before Assyrian came and destroyed it completely. And so we can see that those people traveled and came to Europe and settled there. And actually, some people say the kings of England are from one of the sons of the people from Israel. They're trying to say, because God said his kingdom is going to stay with them forever and ever. So they're trying to find that kind of a relationship between them and his people. Okay. Of course, God changed the name of Abram to Abraham, and he gave him a promise, and all the promise was the material blessing and the scepter, and material blessing is the true territory that we said he promised children of Israel, a large territory. They came all the way to Europe and United States. He also promised the same thing to Arab. Arabs are all the way from Saudi Arabia to North Africa to South America. So he fulfilled his promises. And that is the second and the third seal. See, that's what history should be taught to the children, according to the plan of God. Okay, if they teach the history according to the plan of God, it's much easier for the all the culture also to mix to each other and see how they are related to one another. Okay, the culture are not separated. Okay, for instance, even language. Now there is a lot of tension between West and East right now, but if you truly study, as we said, Spain was under influence of Arabs for 200 years. Okay, actually, European traveled from Europe to India.
How are you doing?
Good. And European traveled from Europe to India, and that's why if you look at India, the people in North India are much whiter color than the people in the South India, okay? Because Indian continent actually came from Africa, okay? It was disconnected from Africa and came and went underneath the continent of Asia, and it still is pushing continent of Asia to the higher and higher level. That's why those mountains was created. Okay, Himalayas, and they are still rising. Okay. So the people who came from that land, they were darker-skinned people. Okay, and then when it went underneath the thing and it started pushing up, then the European came from Europe and came to Africa, to India, and went to Persia and to Assyria, and that is where the Abraham came from. And the whole story started, okay? And eventually, of course, then the European language, which is mostly, you can find it mostly in, probably in, what is that country, west of England? West, no.
Irish
islands and Irish, that's the kind of a language that you used to call. And that language came and mixed up with the Indian language, which was Semitic language and African language and all that. And when they met with each other, they created a new language. Okay? And they were both influenced each other, and that language, of course, became Hebrew and Arabic language eventually. Okay, that's why Hebrew language is very close to Arabic. They were brothers, actually. And even now, if they study Hebrews, and Arabic, you see so similarity, both right to left. Okay, and both are very, a lot of words are the same. And then, of course, Europe came to, see, then it turned back to Europe again. The Arabs came and went to North Africa and they came to Spain. And Spanish language was influenced with Arabic a lot. And then, from Spanish language came French. French, if you study French, is very close to Spanish. Actually, you told me that.
Latin,
yeah. Exactly. Yeah, you call it Latin root. But really, both Spanish and French has been very much influenced with Arabic language. Arabic language is very powerful. As you see, if you study Arabic language, very, very powerful language. And they have also male and female and everything, you know, you say, like French and Germany and of course. And then, of course, French, when the French conquered England, okay, French became the cultural language of English people. So, and after a while, if you were a noble person, you should have known French in England. Okay, so there was a great influence of French language in English, but of course, English eventually evolved itself to a completely separate language. That's why now we say we are going to have an international language. Okay, you learn English. Okay, my recommendation is everybody should learn English. And the people who know English, I recommend learn another language also besides their English. Okay, it's very good for them to do that. And as people learn different languages, they were mixed with each other, they're going to come up with a new language that's going to be much more powerful than any language we have on earth. So we can see that, you know, it is culturally everything is interdependent. Okay? There is no separation between cultures. There is nothing you can say, this is it, we kept this up here and we never mixed anything with each other. That's why all these wars happen. What happens in the wars? So when the people, there's a destruction, but the people also get what? Mixed in, culturally. We don't need that anymore. We can culturally mix now without war and destruction. Yeah, exactly. The tourism and traveling and going to other culture and, you know, for education or all that. So that is the way the history has to be taught to humanity. So people see how they are completely mixed, you know, culturally, and also start to understand one another much in a deeper level. Of course, so far we didn't have that much of communication and transportation as we have now, but now it's pretty easy to get over it. Let's go back to the topic today, and let's see, blessing of the birth, give the Abraham word given to the children of God. All right. This part of God's promise, okay.
That is was the, okay, that, then of course when the Christ came, that was the third seal. The children of Abraham, the children of Israel, were the second seal. As we said, the Old Testament always talk about the community and the tribes and the 12 tribes of Israel. That's what God is, that's the message of second seal, isn't it? It's the tribe, the family, the community, okay? That is the base of his kingdom. The community and the family is the base of the kingdom. So, you want to read it for me? Come on.
I already did.
What it says?
I already said the Bible.
You can tell me, I have to talk about it. No? All right. The blessing of the birthday and the Septuagint. Okay, and also that blessing also was given to Prophet Muhammad. Of course, all these things were covered so far, previous years. Now, we are going to talk about what happened after Islam. Okay? After Prophet Muhammad died, he never chose anybody as his successor. So there is a problem of succession. Who is going to succeed Prophet Muhammad started in Islam? And of course, culturally, Arabs never choose a very young person as their leader. Culturally, you have to be mature and older and proven person in their community and their tribe before they choose you as the leader. So there was Prophet Muhammad and there was his son-in-law, Ali, which was the first person who were converted to Islam. And of course, Ali married Muhammad's daughter, Fatima. Okay, and also there was also the Persians haven't been the Iranians weren't conquered yet. You know, there was a lot of Persian in which we had converted in Islam, and they were in the core with Prophet Muhammad. And but because of the Arabs were just nomads, they just had, you know, tents and few cities, but they didn't have any empires and those things. So, but Persian, there was the Persian Empire. So there was a kind of a cultural clash there between Persian and Arabs, and it still is. Okay, and they don't, you know, they don't like each other very much because they're still trying to, you know,
put each other down or something, which is ridiculous, of course. And because of that clash that they had, Persians, they politically, they tried to promote Ali, the son-in-law of Prophet Muhammad, as the successor. But as we said, Arab won't accept a young man. Ali was very a young person when the Prophet Muhammad died. Of course, these things are probably Greek to you guys, because this is a history of a culture that you have never studied it. Okay, but for our revelation, for understanding what happened later on, it's very important to understand how these culturally things works. That's why Middle East is such a mess, okay? Because there is such a deep-rooted cultural background they have, okay? And that's why they have so many different ideas and interests, and they have a lot of clash with one another. Anyway, people who choose the leader eventually came up with one of his closest, another closest disciple, Abu Bakr. Abu Bakr was an older man. He was probably the second person who converted to Islam, and also he gave everything up to Islam and was very, you know, prominent personality there. So they called him Khalifa. That's when the word Khalifa comes to Arab, to English. You know, have you ever seen the name Khalifa? Actually, there's a game in computer called Khalifa. and because you have the program, Khalifa, the one that some birds comes down, the eye comes down with the. Yeah, you have the game. Yeah, and you're getting good at it too. And because of this, they choose Abu Bakr, and these people will say, no, Ali is the rightful person to be Caliph, because Ali is a part of Muhammad's family. Okay. So in the kind of, okay, another cultural thing you can observe here, Persian is this, were under kings for thousands of years. Even their empire was king and the son, and it's a lineage thing what would happen. So when it came to the successful Prophet Muhammad, the cultural background came out. Okay, they said then after Muhammad should be someone from his family. Okay, so that is the very point of the two main branches of Islam that you hear, Sunni and Shia. Okay, I don't know if you heard about those two branches. Okay, so the Sunni says, that's fine, we just accept the leader according to the decision of the community. Shia says, no, you have to be a lineage of Prophet Muhammad in order to occupy that position. And from now on, of course, these two branches start, you know, be different. Now, people can forget almost about Sunnis, because they just accept the situation and they continue also. They also believe a lot of things that Shias believe. But the Shias also were divided to two branches, Ismailis and Imamis. Okay, Ismailis are the branches that, you know, mostly they said, okay, now they called Ali Imam. Okay, Imam means successor, means representative of Prophet Muhammad. So when the Prophet died, Imam is his replacement. Okay, he is the one who is connected. Okay, nobody else is connected. So they called Prophet Muhammad Ali Imam. Now, Ismailis, they said there is always an Imam present among us. Okay, so from now on, they choose, each time they choose a leader as an Imam. But Imamis, they said, yes, there is Imam among us, but as we see later on, one of them Imam just vanished at 12, but the 12th Imam of them vanished. And they said, even to Appellation? He said that just like a Christian believed Christ is alive, okay, and he will return, they have the same kind of the belief. Not resurrection, they don't say resurrection, they say he will return. He's alive. Somewhere he is accolade, something like that. That he is in a hidden. Okay, hidden Imam. So that is the, again, she had become two branches. Ismailis, that they always choose someone as the leader. And Imamis, that they said our Imam are going to return. Ismailis eventually became, you know, people, you know, their Imam became so powerful, they become assassins. Have you ever heard about assassins in thing? Actually, that come from, yeah, it came to Europe. They became so, they actually trained assassins from the childhood. Yeah. And they would even teach the child, for instance, French, okay, and culture, French culture, everything. And when they in the age, he would go to France, and he would become so culturally adopted that nobody would realize he's not French, okay. And then he would train him to go to the system, okay, and to the system close, get to the leadership, and then if the leadership wouldn't listen to Ismailis, they would assess them, the leader. Okay, they become so powerful, even European kings and things were afraid of them. The assassin was complete. That's when the word came from Ismailis. So they eventually became assassin. Of course, they were destroyed after the Mughals came and all that. But Imamis continued their thing, and they were branched out, you know. One branch called Akhbaris. Akhbaris come from Khabar, means news, okay, or story from the past. Akhbaris were the people that were said, okay, our Imam is not here, our leader is not here, okay, now how we can guide ourselves. What they did is that they took the Quran and they took the stories about how Muhammad handled each situation, hadith, khabar, you know, or news or a story, say, and they tried to adopt that to every situation in day-to-day living. That's called akhbaris. They were, of course, dominating for a long time until they probably close to the in the middle of 18th century and 19th century, when Europe become more intellectual and become more scientific, they start using principles and experimental thing and coming to conclusion through what? Through analysis. Okay, usul really means to be able to analyze. Okay. So now these people came and say, no, we don't have to just rely on this story. We can also analyze every situation, okay, and also listen to see what the Prophet Muhammad said or what happened to them, and then come to a new conclusion. So usul is that start using the principle of, you know, analytic analysis. Of course, also, because they analyzed and they came to a lot of laws and came up with a lot of background of many situations, the laws, they came to a conclusion that the laws and Islam is perfect now. Okay, so we don't need any new revelation and all of those things. So in a kind of a thing, you say, that's it. We don't need to progress. You see, the moment you say that, you're dead. Okay? You can never say, I'm ultimately reached the ultimate goal. Okay? Because God is what? God is infinite. Situations are infinite. You always have to meditate and adopt yourself and go on and on. That is when the Sufis appeared in Islam. Sufis become like they killed the mystical path of Islam. There was no mysticism in it anymore. That's when the Sufism came, like a spirit of the thing. Okay? And also, later on, as the approach, and okay, the one of the things was about Usulis, interesting about Usulis was they create a system and they start creating a kind of a network. And if you want to become an, okay, and then if you reach a point, they call you a authority. You had the permission to become a mujahid. You become a mujahid. Mujahid was the person that he would be supported with this network, and he would go to different cities, and eventually this mujahid became so powerful that they could issue fatwa. Fatwa meant a decree. Okay, and when they would decree something, that was the word of God. Okay, so this clerical class became very, very powerful. You know, that's what now probably you can understand a little bit what happened when Khomeini came. Okay, so Khomeini came and everybody started calling him what? Imam Khomeini. Imam means what? The representative of the Prophet and God. And his word is what? The word of God. Okay. It is, there is a truth in it. Okay. The people who have to lead the community, we talked the night before, they are the, should be the people that are connected to God. Okay. But they have to emerge. Okay. They really should manifest they are connected to God. Okay. Otherwise, what happened? Absolute powers corrupts absolutely. Okay. So these Usulis became very powerful, and also they became very outward going. They become very worldly. Okay. That's why there is another group came called Sheikhis. Sheikhis were from a person by the name Sheikh. All right. And the Sheikhis said, it's not enough just analyze, but you have to have intuition. Intuitively be connected to the spirit. So they really were influenced by Ismailis, Akhbaris, and Sufis. Okay? They became a kind of a mystical people who also realized that not only you meditate, you also have to reach to the community and worship them. 5 minutes break.
The killing of Salman Rushdie is an example for fatwa.
Exactly. That's the decree. When Khomeini decreed that he should be killed, that was his word.
The fatwa.
They don't have any fixed vocal cord. They can't pronounce anything.
Which one?
Children.
The children.
Just ask. just ask Elizabeth. Say khe. She says khe. Very easy. Just like, you know, when Izzy was smaller, I asked him to say khe. He could. Now I ask him, he can't do it anymore. He say khe. So, see, God brings us to this world universal, and then we get adopted to our culture, get locked in. So it's akhbari. Say, can everyone say khe? See, she says khe. Khe. Probably French they can say khe better because they have khe. Khe is pretty close to khe. See, these guys can say, you say? Oh, okay. See? Listen to Ma. Say it. You see? It's come from all the way from. All right. Everybody ready? Okay. All right. So, the Czechs, as we said, they believe that actually there was a school of thought in Islam called Duruni and Buruni. Buruni means external world. Duruni means internal. Durun and within. Within and Durun. And it's so similar, isn't it? Durun and within. Just both of them. But that's another thing you can say, it came from the same probably branch or root or something. So Buruni means the people who accepted everything externally, an external world as the truth, and never, you know, meditated. Or Duruni were people that they were meditative and they were trying to find the truth within themselves. And of course Shekhis, as we said, were also believing in intuition or meditation, or getting the truth also from within yourself. And this Sheikhs didn't start early in Islam at all. It started very late. You know, it probably started at the end of the 18th century. And they continue to preach the teaching, but they were not accepted with the main branch of Islam, and the Usulis. Usulis became the most prominent and dominant force, especially in Iran and the Shia Islam. And eventually Bab became one of a disciple or get connected to the Sheikhs. Okay. And he started studying with them, and actually he went to Iraq and visited them for a year, and while he was there he was such an interesting person that he made an impact on everybody. Everybody remembered him. Actually, the way he approached the mosque, they say he approached different than everybody else. He approached with such a respect and with such a devotion, such a, you know, manner. He approached the mosque that everybody remembered him just for that. He was very, you know, very different than everyone else in the Sheikhs. So, when Sheikhs started, of course, a lot of people also joined them. So it's kind of start being prepared. People start getting prepared for their teachings and for coming of Bab. And we're going to talk about a little about Bab's background now. See what kind of person he was. He was born in the city by the name Shiraz. Shiraz is a southern city in Iran. It's very close to Caspian Sea, in order for his family. And his family were from a merchant family. And we can see also Prophet Muhammad had a merchant background. And he was a master of caravans that he took to Syria. And actually that's how he met Khadija, his wife. Because Khadija was a wealthy woman, okay, and she had a lot of camels. How come we're not wealthy this lifetime, huh? And and Khadija, of course, had his caravan, and Muhammad took a couple of journey for her, but he was so honest, you know, that he was called trustworthy. Read for me. No? He can't read. He can't read, no.
I can't read, but I read it
fast. Okay. And so he was from the merchant family, and then his father died. You know, he started working toward becoming a merchant. Also, he wasn't very good in school. He didn't do very well in the school. He was a dreamer kind of a thing. He would dream out and daydream in the school, and he wouldn't listen to school or something. He was very popular. Yeah. And he, of course, till age 20-something, 22 or something, he is a merchant. He was very honest. He for instance, when he made a transaction with someone, and they would bring the one time somebody had a transaction, and they brought the merchant back, and also although the merchant was used and was defected and misused, he took it back and refined the person money. And it was very unusual doing that, you know, because most of the merchant wouldn't accept that. And he was very, you know, proper in his books and how much they charged him. He was very honest, you know, person. So after all, he became just like Prophet Muhammad was became famous as a trustworthy. He also was a person who could trust and all that. But in that age, suddenly he decided he doesn't want to do this. Okay, he felt a greater calling. He felt, you know, It's what is this? Every day I go to merchant and give my money and work and all this. You know, it's not my life. He became very meditative and started reading scriptures and meditating and all that. And eventually, of course, he closed his merchant and paid all his debts, everything, and went to Iraq. Okay, one of the things that is in those area, Iraq, in southern Iraq, they're mostly Shia. In northern Iraq, they're Sunni. Okay, actually, we remember in the last war, when United States attacked Iraq, the moment southern Iraq felt that Saddam Hussein is weakened, the southern Iraq, the Shia, rebelled against him. And then, of course, Saddam Hussein completely attacked them and brought them under. Actually, I guess Shias, I guess they are majority in Iraq. But Saddam Hussein is from Sunni branch. But the government is the Sunni. So there's a lot of friction going on. And in Iraq, there's a lot of shrines and mosques that are very secret to the Muslim, and there's a lot of cities that Shia go for study and education and learn about Islam and all that. So, but when he closed his transaction, he went to Iraq. Okay? He went to Iraq to join those people and study with them. And as we said, when he went to Iraq, he got connected to Sheikhs. Okay? And And as you said, he became, everybody noticed him because he was so dedicated and he was so, his spirit was so different and all that. But his uncle got very upset because uncle was his partner in a merchant. And not only he lost his a good worker and partner, he suddenly realized he closed the shop and went to Iraq. So he was very upset with him. So he went all the way to Iraq and took him eventually come back to Shiraz with him. And when he brought him to Shiraz, they found him a wife and got him married. So they felt if they get him married, he will settle down and, you know, get going to his work. And of course, when he started working again, and he started being with the merchant. And but what he does that was, he would in the evening, every evening he would go home and meditate, and he would start writing things. Okay, and his wife asked him, "What are you writing?" And he always said, "I'm taking care of the books, merchant books, and balancing the thing." She was thinking, what is he doing? He doesn't have that much of the business that he's spending hours and hours balancing his balance sheet and all that. And of course, later on, you know, it was realized that he was reading verses that he was coming to him, you know, in those books. Of course, the Sheikh's movement started with a person by the name Ahsai, and he started the movement of Sheikhis, and he became very prominent, and he found a lot of followers, especially in Iran and Iraq, and also in even in Sunni, you know, branches of Islam, a lot of people, you know, accepted him and all that. And but then Ahsai died. There's a person by the name of the Rashti. Actually, Rasht is a city in the north of Iran, just like Khomeini. Khomeini is a city in Iran, and when you are from it, you become Khomeini. Means he is from Khomeini, or he is Rashti, so he's from Rasht. See, that I at the end make him from that place. So this person becomes the leader of the Sheikhs, and in the time of his departure in 1944, before he died, 1844, before he died, he didn't choose anyone as his successor again, and he said, you know, that Imam will reveal itself after I die, for a few months or sometime after I die. But after he died, of course, most of his disciples, like, never took that completely seriously. Okay. So when he died, again there was a crisis of the leadership. There were people that they were his closest disciples. They each claimed that to be the successor of Rashti, and there was a great upheaval start in Sheikh's movement, and eventually one person by the name one person who was very close to Rashti, he said, "No, we can't." He remembered. He said, "I remember that our last leader said you shouldn't accept any leader, but wait for Imam." So he went to seclusion, and many of Sheikh's followers also went with him to the seclusion, to a mosque in Iraq, and they stayed there for a long time, fasting and meditating and talking it over, and remembering what the teacher said and all that. And eventually one day, you know, that person said, "We're going to go and seek the Imam." And so they start going from Iraq. They went to Persia, and they came all the way to Shiraz. And When we got close to the Shiraz, the one of the people who were with Bob came and talked with, you know, that person, and invited him to go to see Bob. Of course, some people say that a lot of people already had a feeling about Bob. Okay, that's why they went from Iraq to Shiraz after him. You know, but they felt he was different, he had something. So they start going, so these people went to Shiraz really to meet him, you know, for this purpose. So when these people reached there, it was around the 22nd of the May of 1944, and this person went to Bob. Of course, Bob claimed himself to be Bob. Okay. Bob means the door. Okay. The door meant that he is the door between those people who are seeking the Imam and the Imam himself. Imam still is in hidden place, but he is Bob. But as the movement starts going, he start claiming more and more to be Imam himself. Okay, there's four stations they believe that Imam is. There was Babia, the door, Zakaria, the voice, Biyama, the hidden Imam himself, Mazhariya, the divine manifestation. Okay. This, because he, in the beginning he said, I am Bob, then later he said, I am the voice of the Imam. And later on he said, I am Imam himself. And even later he said, I am a major manifestation. So because of that, there is a lot of confusion created in even Bobby's. Okay. Bobby's really didn't know how to relate to this. Some people believe, early disciples, they believe that he's Bob, he's the door. And later on, of course, other people start believing something else. And of course, then when he claimed himself to be Bob, this person who came from Iraq seeking him believed in him, accepted the his claim, and but he told them to keep it secret, don't tell anyone, you know, because they were afraid. In an Islamic country, you don't say you are a major manifestation or you're an Imam or you know you are a prophet.
Okay.
There is no separation of church of the state and the protection of religion and all those things, you know. It just was completely, you know, unorthodox to do that. Maybe that's why God took me here before he tell me about this revelation. Okay. And so he told them to keep it secret. So this person who believed in him, little by little start talking about him and his teaching to other members of Sheikhis that had come with him from Iraq. And eventually 19 of these people became his, you know, first disciples. And of course they believe the 19 was the 12 disciples, Prophet Muhammad, Ali, and 12 Imams, Prophet Muhammad, Ali, and a couple of other people that are very famous in Islam. So they said they are the manifestation of those people. And these people are called the letter of the world, or letter of something. Letter of the something, something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you remember what it's called? Letter of the, yeah.
The one who lives, who gives, letter
of the. We are alive.
Letter of the living, exactly. Letter of the living, right. See, you get it eventually when you have different languages. So letter of the living. These 19 people became the letter of living. And then, of course, Bob said, send them out and said, go and get those people that are already in the Shaykhi movement. So the 19, some of them they went to north, some of them to the east, some of them to west, and some of them came to Iraq. And they claimed his claim that he is the Bob. He is the one that they are waiting for him, for Muslim to come. Of course, Bob is a Sayyid. The Sayyid is the people of the lineage of Prophet Muhammad. Like if you go to the Islamic countries, they usually have a black turban. Or is it? Yeah, they have black turban. If you are not Sayyid, you have different color of turban. So if somebody has a black turban, it means he is the lineage of Muhammad. Of course, after a couple of hundred years, a lot of people put the black turban without being, the lineage of Muhammad. It's just a human nature. They just, any time they find something, there's a respect and things create, that kind of a feeling, they take advantage of it. So, that is why, well, we don't know if he really is or not. That doesn't really decide the point. But according to, teaching, as we said, it is important that Imam is from what? From lineage of Prophet Muhammad. It's very important to them. If it's not from lineage of Prophet Muhammad, it cannot be the Imam. Of course, this is a to the Muslim. Okay. Also, as we said, they were waiting for Prophet Muhammad, for Imam to come. Why? What happened that they came to this conclusion that Imam went to the hiding? Because after the first four Khalifa, after Abu Bakr, Umar, and Osman, and Ali, okay, the leader of the Muslim went to a person in Syria, okay, and he took the place not by being chosen, by political maneuvering, and eventually gaining power over the military, and eventually claiming himself to be the Khalifa, and that is when the real problem started between those who called themselves close to Prophet Muhammad, and they wanted to follow exactly his teaching and his laws, and those that they were more worldly, and they want to come to their kingdom and all that. Okay, and so after this for Khalifa, the Shia, they choose the sons of Ali, Hassan and Hussein, and then their children of Imam. But anytime they choose an Imam, the central government became very opposed to them, because they were always a threat to the central government in Syria. Okay. So every Imam was poisoned and was killed. Okay. And then in the 12th Imam was only 13 years old when he became Imam. Yeah. And then, of course, he realized if he says he's Imam, what's going to happen to him? It's going to happen the same thing to him. So in a way, he was withdrawn, and eventually nobody knows what happened. Okay. Some people, of course, Shia believed that it became what? He went to hidden. He completely hidden himself. And he's going to return and all that. Just like a Christian believe that Christ was taken to the heaven and he's going to come return. He is hidden. Of course, they don't say anything. How was he hidden? Nobody knows. Of course, he choose four people as the connection between him and those people who believed in him. Okay, so they became a kind of a... He doesn't have any connection with anyone anymore. These four people would go back and forth and bring message from him. And after a while, I guess those four people also was killed. So he was completely disconnected and became hidden among. And so hidden Imam, okay. Now they are waiting for hidden Imam. Okay. That's why if you study the Islamic history, there's so many people claim they are the Imam. They came. But the idea was, because Prophet Muhammad died and the successor didn't go to his lineage and the people took over and the worldly people create a kingdom out of a real kingdom with the palace and servants and gold and all that. Actually, you know, Islamic empire became so large, it was all the way to Spain and all the way to, you know, to India. And you know, so they had a lot of, in the beginning, when they when, for instance, when they conquered the place, when the other leaders came to meet the Islamic leader, he was very pious person. You couldn't recognize him between him and other people. He was just chosen, he was just there, and of course everybody respected him and carried his, you know, work. But after a while it became so fantastic that we study about Sambad and Khalifa, how fantastic, you know, palaces they had, and the story that is very, you know, exotic to Western, you know, culture or Western writing. When you brought to Western writing, they talk about, you know, those culture or those palaces, and so they became very, very rich. So these people always felt when the Imam comes, he's going to bring his army with him. Okay? And his army is going to destroy all the injustice and inequity on earth. Okay? And he will establish the kingdom of heaven on earth. And so when the Bab came, that's what how people they felt. The people who accept his claim, they felt he's the Imam, so we are the chosen people, and so we have to create the army and destroy the infidel. But it didn't happen. It didn't happen. So the Islamic thought came to this conclusion, especially the main Islamic branch, made such a big thing out of Imam and his coming that nobody could feel that expectation. Just like Christians are putting so much thing about coming of the Christ. Nobody can feel, okay, all those expectations. The sky is going to open up and Christ is going to come and say, kingdom come, and kingdom is going to come, and that's it. Nobody has to do anything. You don't have to purify yourself. You don't have to, you know, meditate. You don't have to create the communities of life. It's very easy, simple. He's going to come and do it for you. Okay? Exactly the same. So it reached the point nobody could feel those expectations anymore. It was impossible. Okay? And so reached the point that actually this Mujahid, this Usulis, they came to this conclusion that because Imam is not going to come soon, we are his representative. Okay. So the Usulis became, the Mujahid became the representative of Imam. Okay. And also, as we say, they had a lot of networking with each other. So after a while, Mujahid became very, very powerful figure in the community. And that is exactly what he said, the fatwa would come. So when Bab comes and say, I'm Imam, what happens? Do you think they're going to accept him right away? They're going to give up all their prestige and power and all that and say, yeah, sure, come in, you know, take over. You know, they won't do that. And and that's exactly what happened when he came to and proclaim himself as being the Imam. And so there was an opposition to Bab from the priest class. Now, when he claimed himself, his followers really didn't know about his teaching at all.
Okay.
The only thing they accepted was his imam, and they spread out to give the news.
Okay.
And a lot of people accept that. A lot of people accept the news that he is imam. You know. And so he, in 2 years, he had around an estimate between 40,000 to 150,000 followers, all through Iraq and Iran. And his followers, of course, before, most of them were Shia, okay, and they became very, very militant.
Okay.
They, you know, that was just such an amazing creative energy was released to them.
Okay.
And then, as they became militant, of course, the priest class didn't like what they saw. They said, wow, this thing is getting really powerful. But government didn't like mujahids. They didn't like the priest class, because priest class was almost as powerful as government. Actually, there was a balance of power there. There was a government which had all the military and taxes and all that, and there was mujahid, or the priest class, which had all the schools, mosques, and spiritual centers in Iran and in Iraq, in South Iraq. Okay. Now, this mujahid had the mosque, and they were connected to the people.
Okay.
A mosque in a place that all the people would want to listen to the preacher. So they had the ability to arouse people by their preaching.
Okay.
So anytime government did something against them that mujahid didn't like, they would steer the people against government. So the government realized that they are a very powerful force. So they wouldn't even touch them.
Okay.
So eventually they became a kind of a truth in the middle. The government between them. But of course they would overlap the authority once in a while, and you know, anytime the government tried to go over mujahideen's territory, they get upset when mujahideen got go over the government's thing, and they get over. Actually, people say one of the reasons that the priest class revolt in Iran was that Shah cut off their part of the taxes that he used to give them to that class. And then when he did that, they were cut off from a lot of income, so they completely rebelled against them and stood the people and eventually destroyed them. Of course, that should have happened. You know, we know that all is God's plan. All these things happens, you know, with his plan and have a purpose and reason behind them. So these people become Babis, and they go to these communities. Now there's this mujahid, this priest class would say, they are getting power, they're converting people, you know, more and more. So they would steer the people against them, and they would organize a mob against Babis communities. And they would go and attack Babis community, and they will, Babis of course, they were the chosen people, they should bring the kingdom on earth, and they should fight and establish, you know, justice. So they will fight back with this mob group. Of course, the Babis weren't very well prepared. They were just regular people. They would, you know, they weren't military people. So they were well equipped, well trained, and eventually the government had to interfere with this uprising of the people against the Babis and the fight, and the government troops would come in, and the Babis eventually would be murdered and destroyed and killed. Of course, that goes very well with the prophecies of the fifth seal, doesn't it? That there were many with the white robe, and they will be murdered. Okay. So there's a lot of models are in Bobby's movement. Any question? No? Those are Baha'is.
What?
Those are Baha'is.
Just the
Baha'is. Yeah, we'll get to that. Yeah, well, it's actually there's two they call it two ages, the old age and new age in Baha'i revelation. In old age, the history was recorded completely according to the what happened. Okay, but when the as we're gonna go over it, Bob is almost completely destroyed. Okay, that is one reason we need Baha'u'llah, to bring the teaching to the West. If Baha'u'llah wasn't, you know, there, you would never hear about Babis, because there is almost no Babis in Iran anymore. You know, it's just completely destroyed, you know, because of this militancy that they had toward, you know, their, you know, revelation. And so in a sense they weren't peaceful at all. You know, they were actually looking for trouble in a sense, because they wanted to establish, you know, justice. But of course they didn't get the chance to organize themselves. Okay, but they became, as you said, they're not well equipped, they're not well trained, and also, you know, the kingdom doesn't have to come with sword anymore. Okay, the kingdom can come with understanding and meditation, and, you know, realizing that God sent all these revelations. You know, that's what, as I said many times, we are not the revolutionary people. They are evolutionary people. Okay. In evolution, through evolution, eventually humans will reach a point that they see they are connected, they are one, they are from one source, and God sent all these revelations, and they eventually, little by little, are going to come. Of course, with the creation of the communities of light, we can put an example for everyone else that how it can be done. Okay. But in that culture, in that teaching, in that kind of a understanding, Shias still are militant. Okay. Who are most militant, you know, people right now on earth? Shias. We read in news who does a lot of things that we did. Usually are Shias. They still have that militancy mentality and spirit. So that is why when the Babis saw their Messiah has come, they felt, that's it. We can go ahead and be militant. So, Babis were not peaceful. Baha'is are. Yeah, okay. Release the Sun is written with the Baha'is. Okay. It is very important to recognize Baha'i changed a lot of things after Baha. Mm-hmm. No. Right. The Baha'i came and brought those teachings, and they were militant. And when they were completely destroyed, Baha'i came and made everything peaceful. Actually, he taught, don't get involved with government activities at all. Just create your communities and become peaceful, and don't even confess who you are sometimes. Okay. That was one of the principles that one of the imams gave to his disciples. Okay, that in the situations that you might be in trouble by confessing your faith, it's okay to conceal it. Okay. And then that's exactly what Babis did. No, but we don't have to conceal anything. Okay. Because I believe that the whole process of Western thought about separation of the church of an estate and the freedom of religions and all that, have come to us, so when this revelation comes, we don't have to be afraid about it. Okay? We can just say, yeah, I believe in that. Okay. Actually, when I was in, when last time I went to Iran, I explained the great sign to my family. Okay. And I was going, okay, this is the mystical path, it's like Sufism, meditate, and this is the Judaism and Hebrew. People say, yeah, yeah, it makes sense. And then it is Christianity and Isa and, it's, you know, all the Christian, oh, yeah, that's fine with Islam. And that is Islam. Oh, yeah, great, great. And that is Baha'i. And my father said, you better go back. You can stay here. But if this teaching had come in Iran, an Islamic country, you know, I would be gone a long time ago. Okay.
Probably the word of the organized group of, you know, people coming after a teaching. Nowadays, in this country, there are a lot of free radicals running around. There are a lot of, course, and also the people who do not believe in mixing races, and they're becoming very powerful. So you have to...
Yeah, actually... Actually, that is that. As we say, when the light comes, also darkness gets stronger. Okay, that's why, you know, there is so many. That's why also I said you have to be wise, like a serpent. Okay, just you don't have to, you know, preach that to the person who doesn't believe in a cruelty of races. You know, if, you know, you have to preach to those people. They are in a state of consciousness that they recognize the unity of, you know, humanity and religions and the races, and they are intelligent enough, okay, to see these things are the truth. Okay, you don't go and teach this to a punk, okay, or a skinhead. Okay, the skinhead doesn't even have a feeling about, you know, another race or anything like that. So we are talking about, but that is God's revelation. God said, I'm going to make you one. I'm going to unify you. Okay, so we cannot stop preaching it. Okay, but we have also to preach to those people, they understand it. That's why, again, the communities of light is so important. You know, we can be strong enough to preach it, to reach out. But it's true that, you see, those people are not the majority. Okay, these punks and skinheads and all those people, the separate races, they're not the majority. The majority wants this. The majority wants peace. The majority wants unity. The majority wants the communities of light. The majority wants light. Okay? So don't listen to a minority that creates such a big news. Okay? News is something that fearful, makes you fearful. Okay? So don't take those news in television very seriously, because also they are there, but they are not the majority. They are very minority that, because they are outspoken, okay, and they make a lot of noise, everybody listens to them. These days, since anybody who has bigger voice gets his way better. And that shouldn't be like that. That's what is so important. Again, we have to go to God again and have that yardstick that we talked last night, and see, should we listen to the loud voice of those people that are yelling and trying to get our attention, or should we listen to God's voice, which is very quiet and very deep within ourselves? Okay. So a lot of people have been caught into news and things is happening there, and they take a little people, few people, so seriously. And so we should recognize that they are not the majority. Okay? And eventually, as we preach this and it spreads out, you know, we reach a point that, you know, they will not have any voice at all. And their voice is going to be very small. Instead of using the news for the bad news and always talking about gangs and, you know, skinheads and punks and destructive and gays and now we can create what? We can create wonderful thing happen today in this community. We did this, we created this hospital there, we created this nice school. Look at our children, they're learning and they're wonderful, they're teaching them, they're growing beautifully, you know, everybody, see, that's become yours. Then you feel very comfortable and very safe, okay? Of course, as a divided we stand, okay? If we hang together, if we don't hang together, we're going to be hanged separately. Okay? This is exactly, that's what the founding father said. Exactly. We fall, exactly. And also he said, you know, if we hang together, we will succeed. If we stay separately, we are going to be hanged separately. Okay? That's why you guys out there, you know, it's hard for you. Because you are so divided, individual, to nowhere, nobody listens, nobody, you know, nobody is with you. But as the communities of light has created, you become stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger. And this is the critical point that we will win. That critical point comes, everybody wants to be in community of light. Probably not everybody, but most of the people want to be in community of light. What the people want? Peace, you know, security, okay, in the neighborhood. You know. This neighborhood is more secure than if you were in here. It's a very secure neighborhood because of us. If we were in here, these people wouldn't get together. They wouldn't. They would completely separate. That's why each one of us should become a source of security in our community. As we create more community like that and people feel secure, they would be more than willing to, you know, to join us. Okay, we continue this tomorrow.